It is 2 o'clock, and welcome to the program on this 23rd day of January. We are into 9 hours and 25 minutes of daylight. Welcome. It's a sunny afternoon, a bit on the cool side. Looks like a little bit of snow coming our way tomorrow, but according to Richard, it'll change over to rain, maybe back and forth. No significant amounts. We've been a pretty lucky bunch, haven't we, so far this January? So far this winter. Welcome to the program. A little more detail, a few more details trickling out on this rather troubling story. We had finally heard from some of the officials with the RCMP in Nova Scotia, stacked floor to ceiling with dangerous chemicals, and many of them still unidentified. Person that made the statement here today is a chief superintendent for the RCMP, Roland Wells, who says he's never seen this quantity of chemicals ever before. No question that when we spoke with the folks with the hazmat team yesterday, that, and not again in reference to this case, but in general, if you don't know what you're dealing with, you got to go carefully, especially if what is there is significantly dangerous, right? All right, that's one of the stories we'll be following here throughout the afternoon, and we'll also be chatting a little bit with an economics professor from St. Effects to find out a little bit more about what this central bank rate. Already hearing from one of the majors saying they're not lowering their key interest rate, even though the national rate went down slightly. We're going to chat with Gary Oliver. His daughter recently set a Guinness World Record for spinning. She's a figure skater, and she spun, and she won the Guinness record for it. And we're going to hear from Chris Martin. She was involved with the Dare to Dream Home Lottery. Don't know if you caught some of the news stories, but the authorization body, the body that gives the people the right to do these types of lotteries, looked into it and said, no, nothing illegal. So we're going to chat with her coming up in the program this afternoon. I invite you to stick around for that conversation. Also on the show this afternoon, we'll be hearing from Rachel Ward. She's publisher of The Watch, University of King's newspaper. The student newspaper's having a few financial issues. There seems to be something holding up the cash that paper uses to get the ink to the paper. We're going to hear from Roger McKnight, Chief Petroleum Analyst with Enpro International. Talk about what's going to happen with the price of oil now that the King of Saudi Arabia has died. You know what? The tickets went on sale this morning for The Price is Right. That's coming at the Dartmouth Sportsplex. And sold out. All sold out. Well, it's pretty much sold out. We're going to talk with Lucille Benoit about that. We're going to hear from a student union at Dalhousie who are planning a craft dinner cookout in protest. And a brand new brewery is getting worked out. The Wrought Iron Brewery crew is hard at work trying to get the suds a-flowing. We're going to chat with Josh Council and Todd the Beer Dude as we wrap up our Friday. But here it is at 2:03 in the program. Yeah, welcome. Last night was a huge event, a chance to celebrate the best of the best. And someone who was there to give us a little bit of a perspective from the side of the board from the Halifax business community. It's the Halifax Chamber of Commerce's vice chair. And we say good afternoon to Rob Batherson. Good day. Long time no speak.
Hi, Sheldon. Great to talk to you today.
How was the event last night?
Look, it was a fantastic event. We had over 600 people out to celebrate a lot of the business success stories here in the city, companies that are doing great work here at home and literally around the world. And we don't celebrate success enough in this city, and so it was a great way to sort of start the year in terms of a very ambitious Chamber of Commerce agenda.
All right. You were the host?
I was. Had to pinch hit. Unfortunately, our great CEO, Valerie Payne, she's been suffering from a bit of a January cold, like many people here in the community, so was happy to pinch hit on her behalf.
Funniest thing I saw the other day, someone posted, I had the dreaded man cold. It was a lady I know, a nurse, who said, it's the dreaded man cold. I didn't know that was an insidious thing that gets passed around. Apparently it is. So last night, you all got together. Where was the awards ceremony held?
It was at the World Trade Convention Center, and we've been doing this, Sheldon, for the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. Part of our five-year strategic plan that we adopted 2 years ago that we hope will see Halifax become one of the top three growth cities in Canada by 2018, part of that strategic plan focuses on promoting entrepreneurship. We're only going to be a leading city for growth in Canada if we have everybody in the business community, small businesses, medium-sized, large businesses, pulling together and growing, because through growth we create jobs, we give back to our communities, we're able to pay taxes that we need for public services. So having a vibrant business community is part and parcel to growing our economy.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes in this business, we, and I'm not even saying the royal we here, the media is sometimes accused of being dwelling on the negative. This is certainly not a negative. Glad to hear that you guys had a great event last night. Care to go through some of the winners with me?
Absolutely.
So, new business of the year. Just before we do that, where did the nominees come from? Within the chamber organization?
No, inside and outside. We, the call for nominations actually for next year started last night. So we go through a very vigorous process over several months. We had a judging committee of which I was a member that reviewed over 120 submissions, and it was quite a tough call. There are many great businesses doing great things. So that's how that started. The gold medal winner for new business of the year was East Coast Lifestyle.
Oh, no course, question.
Alex McLean, I mean, who doesn't have a shirt or a hoodie or with that East Coast Lifestyle
across
brand?
The country, my friend.
Across the country, and I've seen it in the States. I've seen it in Europe. It's getting around.
Did he get his, he was trying to finish up his business degree. I thought that was rather ironic. Here's a guy who had to take time away from his successful business to finish his business degree.
Well, and absolutely, Sheldon. And when we think about universities, this started out as a business assignment at Acadia, and now is creating wealth and jobs here in Nova Scotia. It's a fantastic story.
Well done. And you get a free T-shirt when you buy beer. That could be a good thing, too.
Exactly.
All right. New business. That's great news. Small business of the year. When you say small, how small?
Look, we had some single proprietorships. So,
oh, really? Okay.
But generally, small businesses would be under 25 employees. And the winner for small business, Jill's Chocolates. A great. We didn't have any samples last night, sadly. they flashed it up on the screen in advance. But Jill wanted to have a product that people could, if they're at an airport or at a shopping mall looking to go home, that they could pick up and take home.
That makes perfect sense. Absolutely. You see the people carting lobster. Why not? Chocolates make
exactly.
a great idea, too.
We'll send our chocolates, too.
Yeah. International Business of the Year. So this is for doing work internationally?
Correct. And so the winner there was Blue Ocean Contact Centers. They employ 600 people here in Halifax. They've been in business for 20 years. And you might think, well, why international business? Blue Ocean is an inbound contact center, so they do work for companies mainly in the U.S., but also in other parts of the world where they essentially act as service and advisors for people when they call in. But again, one of those companies that's been operating under the radar for over 20 years and now employing 600 people out in the West End on Bears Road.
There you go, one of those overnight success stories that took 20-some years.
Exactly.
Innovative business of the year, there must be quite a few to pick from for that.
Very much so. And so the winner there was Green Power Labs, Alex Peslovsky, who has been involved in the chamber for a number of years as chair of our Energy and Sustainability Committee, a new Canadian, someone who came from Russia and is now promoting sustainable environmental technologies that can be used by businesses.
I love this business of the year, and this is another one of those businesses that kind of is hidden away that really there aren't many people outside of my industry that know a whole lot about them.
Yeah, if you're driving out towards Hackett's Cove, maybe turn in and check out Nautel. They're selling radio and other communications devices to customers in the States, but also elsewhere. And they've really seen growth over the last number of years, despite some challenges with the dollar and other issues.
And is the Premier Award the Business Person of the Year? Is that the one that you waited till the end to reveal?
That's the big one. Certainly, that's what everybody waits for. And this year, and it was a very tough decision. There were a lot of quality names who came for and quality names among the finalists. But ultimately, we ended up with Sean O'Regan, who's CEO of O'Regan's Group. Very special time for Sean because 2015 marks the 100th year that a member of the O'Regan family started selling cars. His grandfather in Parsborough was the first O'Regan family member to get started, and now they have a very successful and growing dealership here, not only GM products, but other lines as well, employing 800 people.
Wow, 100 years. Yeah, Rick Howe bought his car there 75 years ago, his first car. I think he still has it, too. I'm kidding.
Not a gremlin, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Speaks volumes. You know what? This is great. I appreciate this. And are we going to see Rob Batherson hosting more of these kinds of events? I know you said you were pinch hitting last night, but I hear you did a great job.
Well, I'm vice chair of the board now, and Francis Ferris, the great lead behind King's Wharf, is chair until the end of April. So as I take the reins from him later this year, I'm sure you'll see my face kicking around a little bit more. But, you know, the problem with hosting is you can't have as good a time as some of the other guests have. So.
I hear you. I've been there. All right, Rob. Thank you, and congratulations on what sounds like it was a fantastic night.
Thanks, Sheldon. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about success in the business community here in the city.
Cheers, sir.
Bye-bye.
Vice Chair of the Halifax Chamber of Commerce, Rob Batherson, who was the host of last night's Halifax Business Awards. And congratulations to all the winners and the nominees. You know, I have been lucky enough over the years to be at these types of events, not necessarily just for the business, but, you know, peer groups nominating their peers and recognizing them for work well done, you know. It can be a real great boosting, empowering kind of night, and glad we were able to talk about it. All right, 2:11. Coming up in just a second, we're going to talk about the 5 digital health trends for 2015. In fact, I heard number of people were asking for some devices for their, not some devices, specific devices before Christmas. And I think it's about time we delved into this topic on the show. Coming up in just a few seconds, we're going to chat with Josh Blair. If you want to stick around for that conversation.
You're listening to the Sheldon McLeod Show.
All right, it's 2:15. Just see in my email inbox, news update, a breaking news alert from News 95.7, because you can sign up to get those. Christopher Phillips will stay behind bars until January 29th. He was in the Dartmouth Provincial Court earlier this afternoon. He's a 42-year-old charged with uttering threats, possessing dangerous chemicals. Well, dangerous weapon. There's still the evacuation order in effect for the 5 homes in the Dyke Road area of Grand Desert. Police say that cottage out there stacked floor to ceiling. And we had a reporter at that event, the newser this afternoon. We had a reporter at the courthouse. We have all kinds of resources to tell you about what happened. And stay tuned. This is the place to go to hear the latest on this story. You know, there was a story not that long ago in the Wall Street Journal that says the future of medicine is in your smartphone, saying that new tools are tilting health care control from doctors to patients, putting the power in our hands. Find out a little bit about this and perhaps some of the 5 digital trends as they refer to health for 2015. We reach out to our phones to Josh Blair, Chief Corporate Officer and Executive Vice President. Tell us, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good, Sheldon. Thank you for having me on the show.
I'm really glad you were able to join us about this. And, you know, I've heard of folks who have connected their devices. For years, we've heard of, you know, ways to track your fitness with your smartphone. 5 digital trends for 2015. How did you crunch the numbers, or how did you come up with your list?
Well, TELUS has a health technology business, and actually it's the largest one in Canada for 5 years now. And so we have technology that's in doctors' offices, available to consumers and pharmacies, and trying to help the Canadian healthcare system to evolve and advance over time. So we have many medical doctors on our staff, and we were able to come up with our view on what the future holds.
All right. So if you don't mind, we could go through the list. What do you feel will be the first one we're going to talk about? Wearables. I've certainly heard about these.
Yeah, so wearables is number one on the list, and just exploding. As you alluded to when you opened, you can track your fitness, your steps, but wearables are becoming more advanced where you can actually track your sleep patterns, perhaps your heart rate, blood pressure, etc. So it's giving a lot of power to individuals in their hands. But the flip side of that is there's so many options out there now, numerous things like Fitbits and Nike devices, etc. And last time I looked, we're now at 97,000 apps out there that can help track your health. So what we're trying to do at TELUS is help people through our learning centers and our stores to make the choices that are right for them.
Mm-hmm. And that seems to be a trend going forward. If it's harder to get into your doctor, I guess knowing what your personal stats are and tracking those, fairly important, I would assume.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt that it will help the Canadian healthcare system, our publicly funded system, if we all take more control of our own health and shift our focus from the remediation of diseases to trying to prevent them in the first place through just being on top of what we need to do in our individual situation to live healthier lives.
Kind of moves into number two on your list, healthcare system connectivity. Is this happening? Are those types of technologies available to us?
Yeah, they are, and we're a large provider of them. And the whole goal there is to put the patient at the center of the healthcare system. So there's no doubt today, as one of us goes through the healthcare system, it feels like a bunch of silos. A hospital may have a different view on us than our doctor does, than our dentist does, than our chiropractor does. And so our technology is building the capability for the system to have a more singular view of our health and for us to have that view of our health too. So I think it will really help in the years ahead.
All right. The internet, that's not new, but the Internet of Things and home health monitoring. I've not heard of this at all.
Well, this is a great one. So what this enables is if you've been in the hospital, or say you've had an elderly parent who's been in the hospital with a heart condition or a respiratory condition or maybe chronic diabetes, when they go home, rather than just being left to their own worries and their own devices and maybe having to go back to the hospital several times, we now have technology that can monitor their health from home. So if they had a heart condition, this technology, they can just plug in twice a day, register their heart rate, register their blood pressure, their oxygen in the blood. That information can go to their doctor. And if everything's fine, then they just keep living an independent, happy life. But if anything shows up as a concern, their doctor can get on the phone with them or bring them into the office. And it's just incredible what it's doing. Way, way less hospital visits as a result. And people can live an independent, healthier life as a result.
I want to ask Josh Blair, Chief Operating Officer, Executive VP, TELUS Health, on the phone with us. I remember my grandmother would have to invite me over every once in a while because... Well, she'd hit the wrong buttons on her remote control. When you're talking about using that kind of a system to monitor, how far along are we to that kind of invisible barrier, the connection where I don't have to think about it, where it just automatically does what it needs to do?
I think we're a ways off from that. Yeah. And so what we have to focus on is making it as simple as possible. So we've literally enabled it on an iPad, and someone just connects a blood pressure cuff to their arm and quickly takes their measurement, and then the rest is done for them. The iPad takes the measurement, sends it off to their care team. I think in the future we'll be able to wear devices that do all of that for us, but we're not quite there yet.
So still a bit of science fiction, but the fact is coming soon then.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Electronic medical records, that's a huge deal too, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's really about doctors making the migration from rather than having paper files that many of our doctors still have to having electronic files so that they've got a much better history on each of us, can access that history much quicker. There isn't the risk of loss of our information. And also, if we happen to end up in the hospital one day, that information can be pulled up from the hospital versus calling the doctor's office and they're closed, et cetera, et cetera. So this is important. We're behind the rest of the world in Canada here, but we're catching up quickly, which is great.
What I like about that is typos are one thing, but that stereotype about doctors' handwriting, it's a stereotype for a reason. It's true in many cases, and written records, obviously, there's a chance for someone not to be able to read the writing. I think that's a good way to go. And I guess you briefly touched on this final issue, the big data and privacy. If my records are all electronic, I'm going to want to make sure no one else can see them, or that only people who have the right to have the access can see them, eh?
Yeah, so you want them to be as secure as possible, and there's no doubt that a secure electronic system is a lot safer in that regard than manila envelopes with a bunch of paper that can get misplaced, etc. So we're definitely going to a more secure world in terms of our health information.
So do you track all your health stuff? Are you one of these folks who are wearing a wearable?
I am, and I have good reason to be. So I happen to be pre-diabetic, which
okay.
Just means not quite into the diabetes zone, but at risk of it. And so I have a personal health record, which is great because I can see what my blood sugar levels are each and every month, what my longer-term measurements are. It's called your A1C, and it really helps and motivates you to do the right things fitness-wise, nutrition-wise, to keep yourself in a good zone.
So does your doctor ask to see that, or do you just offer it?
Yeah, actually, so my doctor and I basically share that information, okay. which makes it a much better process.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask, what about the uptake on that? You know, doctors, like other human beings, sometimes change is difficult to embrace, and you know, the only thing constant is change. So how are you working to help maybe make this technology a little easier to use so that both sides find it a little more appealing?
Well, you're right. Ease of use is the most important by far, and we are the largest provider of electronic records for doctors. About 13,500 doctors across the country use our records, and we're seeing the adoption really pick up. So if you went back 2 years ago, only about 56% of doctors, family doctors, were using electronic medical records. Today, that sits at about 75%, and you can look to other countries where it's at 97%. So we're getting good momentum in that regard, which I think is good for Canadians.
All right. I appreciate this. Glad you were able to find some time this afternoon to chat with us about it.
No, my pleasure, and take care.
Oh, absolutely. Josh Blair is the Chief Corporate Officer, Executive Vice President with TELUS Health, talking about these health monitoring trends, wearables, proactive health monitoring, healthcare system connectivity, the Internet of Things, and home health monitoring, healthcare collaboration, electronic medical records, and big data, and big privacy. Yeah, again, that article in the Wall Street Journal that showed up a couple of weeks ago, actually it was the 9th it was printed, part of their Saturday essay, talking about over the past decade, smartphones radically changing many aspects of our everyday lives. And it's slowly making its way into healthcare, right? You know, you still have the little plastic container with you know, the days of the week on it, so you can make sure you keep your medication straight. There's an app for that. How many apps did he say? Thousands, tens of thousands, almost 100,000, if I remember correctly. All right, it's 2:25. In just a few moments, we're going to turn our attention to the economy. As we heard, the Toronto Dominion Bank says they're not going to lower their fixed interest rates, at least not yet. And so far, none of the other major banks have weighed in on this discussion. The federal bank rate, the one set by the Bank of Canada earlier this week, stuck at 1% since, 5 years? Since 2010? Well, this past week, they lowered it to 0.75, 0.75%. Partly over the risk or the concern of the risk that low oil prices will have on our economy, on inflation. And we did hear a few stories about that in the news today, that inflation would have been a whole lot different had the price of gasoline not plummeted by 40% over the last several months. It did go up here slightly in Nova Scotia, just a little bit. But price of diesel stayed the same, which, why you say, is that important? Well, if you heat with oil, that means the price of your heating oil didn't go up. We all have a few extra dollars in our pocket now if we drive our own vehicles. That's a big deal when we're talking about interest rates. A quarter of a percentage point across the country, it's a lot of money. So we're going to chat with an economics professor about that, and we're going to hear about the Ivany Report Status Symposium. What? AIMS, the Atlantic Institute for Market Studies, is actually getting together a group of people to talk about 1 year after the release of the Ivany Report. And the purpose of it will be to, well, talk about and establish objective measurements to track economic progress, all in ways to see where we are, whether we're hitting the benchmarks or whether we're stumbling over the hurdles. And they got quite the impressive list of people, business people set to join them for that. We're going to talk about that in just a few moments. And coming up just after 3 o'clock, a young girl who was overseas has set a Guinness Book of World Records, 11-year-old from Tantallon, and it was quite the feat. So we're going to talk about that with her father coming up on the show. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We've got a news update in just a moment, and more of our show continuing right after that.
Hey, welcome back. It's Sheldon with you here on News 95.7 at 2:31. A busy news afternoon. Stay tuned. Keep it locked right here on our frequency for all the latest on what's going on around our city and beyond. We are glad to have you aboard here this afternoon. As mentioned, we're going to talk about the Ivany Report Status Symposium in just a few moments. We're going to hear from Gary Oliver about his daughter setting a Guinness record. And we're going to check in with Chris Martin about the Dare to Dream Home Lottery. As we were talking about this story over the last few weeks. Apparently, the regulator who looked into it said nothing wrong, absolutely nothing wrong with selling and buying back a lottery home. And we're going to talk to her about that. We're going to hear about Robbie Burns Day. The birthday of the poet is on, the bard poet is actually Sunday, but a number of organizations are holding their event tomorrow around Nova Scotia, Nouvelle Coast, New Scotland. Yep. We're going to chat with National Chief Betty Ann Lavallee. She's part of this, on a part of a tour for a national grassroots engagement tour. And after the five, it's about oil prices. We'll talk about craft dinner cookout protest. And we'll also hear about Wrought Iron Brewery and The Price is Right. Thought we'd turn our attention right now to the economy. Earlier this week, we saw the Bank of Canada reducing its interest rate, and that has some of us wondering, is it a good time to renew our mortgages? Or, as we saw with at least one of the major banks, they're not doing anything with their rate, at least not right now. To find out a little more about this afternoon, Associate Professor, Chair of the Department of Economics at St. FX University. And, sir, a little bit of help with your last name. How do you pronounce your last name?
Well, you pronounce it Catch.
Catch, as in catch.
As in catching a ball.
All right, so Greg Catch. How long have you been a professor?
I've been at St. FX since 2010, but prior to that I taught at some universities in Ottawa, and I also worked at the Bank of Canada over an 18-year period.
So this announcement this week came, in many ways, according to what I'm hearing, is a bit of a surprise that they lowered that rate from 1, where it had been stuck for 5 years, down to 0.75%. Was it a surprise to you?
Well, it was a surprise. You know, in terms of the reduction itself, probably not, but in terms of the timing and the language used, it was very much a surprise because the Bank of Canada had not been massaging or preparing the markets for this kind of move. And in fact, as early as 2 months ago, it was in fact hinting that rates might have to go up. So in that sense, it was a little bit of a surprise in terms of how they went about this rate move.
You know, a 0.25%, is that a big deal?
The magnitude itself is not a big deal, but the real big deal is the change in the language and the type of signal that the Bank of Canada is sending right now. So that's what's got people talking a lot, because it signals, in terms of language, the Bank of Canada called this taking out some insurance, and that it would be willing to take out even more insurance if conditions warranted. So markets right now are viewing this as a signal that we would be entering or maintaining our low-rate environment for some time to come.
You know, we talk about interest rates and the Bank of Canada setting that rate. What does that rate mean? What is it for?
The rate itself is just the rate at which banks borrow from each other in the overnight market. So, for example, some banks may be short $10 million, and some banks might have a surplus of $10 million, and the Bank of Canada itself acts as a referee between the banks as they borrow and lend from each other in the overnight market. And that rate itself can influence other short-term rates and, to a certain extent, influence longer-term rates and things like mortgage rates.
You know, when we hear about this rate, and I guess the TD Bank was the first to come out to say they're not going to cut their prime rate, at least not for now. How much of the national bank rate is factored into what the banks charge us for mortgages?
Normally, it's factored in quite a bit, but once you're hitting these very low levels, banks are reluctant to keep decreasing their rates because they do have certain fixed costs that they need to manage, and also risk that they need to manage in terms of their borrowing and lending. So they can't really go beyond a certain threshold. So we're getting very close to that threshold now in terms of the language that these commercial banks are using and saying, look, we're not really willing to go much below 2.25% or 2%. So we're pretty much scraping the bottom right now.
You know, how often do they follow each other, though? If one does it, are the others likely to follow?
They would. For competitive reasons, they would have to do it, so someone's going to have to blink first. So if it hasn't happened yet, we'll have to watch over the weekend as they start analyzing their positions, and some banks may want to move first and maybe to capture some more market share in the mortgage market. And if that happens, other banks may have to follow suit.
Hmm. How is the price of oil a factor in this in any way?
The price of oil in terms of the bank's decision was 100% behind its move right now, because it is extremely worried in terms of what the impact of a falling oil price is having on the Alberta and Western Canadian economy right now. And this interest rate reduction is precisely aimed at trying to soften the blow of that negative impact in Western Canada.
Hmm, without question. It is a fascinating story, and I guess we're in a holding pattern to find out if it's a good time to renew. coincidentally, my mortgage is coming up for renewal.
Well, let's put it this way. You won't be making a bad move if you had to renew over the next few months. So certainly now is going to be a good time to renew your mortgage.
So that said, should I be locking in for as long a term as I can get?
Well, right now, the interesting thing is that what's driving the longer-term rates right now is more the reduction in the inflation rate that's coming about due to the falling oil price. And right now, 10-year government bond yields, which have a lot of influence on the longer-term mortgage rates, are at historical lows. So locking in on long-term rates right now would not be a bad move.
Hmm. All right. Well, I appreciate this, and thanks. We'll reach out to you again in the future when we have questions about finance and economics.
Sure. Anytime.
Greg Katch, economics professor at St. FX. All the best to you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Almost 2:38 on the program, and an interesting discussion it was, for sure. And we've certainly been following this story about the unstable chemicals found. We had that update earlier this afternoon. We're going to see if we can't get some more detail on this particular story throughout the afternoon. Still trying to make sense of what exactly was at the root of this. The man involved, this gentleman, is being held in custody. He's been remanded as the, that's the correct term, the legal term, remanded, held in custody. And that will be until, what did we say, till the 30th of the month? He'll have to show up. That's a Friday. And we still don't know all of the chemicals. We have had a bit of a glimpse as to at least one chemical that was named, this osmium tetroxide, and a few people saying it is pretty nasty stuff, but no speculation whatsoever from what I can tell about the motives, why this Christopher Burton Phillips had these chemicals and why he was stockpiling them and perhaps what he was intending to do with them. All right, almost 2:39. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Yeah, looks like a big fun event, hey, with the Halifax's Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada. Ron McLean, yep. Wendell Clark, yep. Coming up on the 12th of February, my birthday, there's going to be some rock at the Spatz Theater. There's music with performances by Theo Fleury, the Barra McNeils, Buck 65, Rich O'Coin, Great Lake Swimmers, Great Lake Skiers. That'd be a whole different band, I'm thinking. And the Bedini Band. Dave Bedini is a huge hockey fan. He's written a couple of books about it. He's talked extensively about it. He'll be in Halifax. I think everybody's going to be in Halifax for part of this. And it's a topic that we're going to take on here on this show and discuss with you, tell you a little bit more about it as we get a little bit closer. Coming up right around that same time as Hockey Day in Canada is taking place, there will be a conference. It's called For the Love of Nova Scotia, Let's Focus on the Economy, the Ivany Report 1 year later. Now, that'll be on the 11th of February. It's all an effort to try and develop some benchmarks, some gauges, some ways of measuring and tracking economic progress in the years following the One Nova Scotia Report on the New Economy, also known as the Ivany Report. For a little bit of detail on this event and some of the folks involved, we're reaching out here this afternoon to Marco Navarro Gini, President and CEO of the Atlantic Institute for Market Studies. Hi, Marco. How are you?
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, sir. It sounds like you've got quite a crew of people invited for this panel coming up on the 11th of February.
Yes, it's a pre-birthday bash for you.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to hear that you were able to catch that. Now, this is who's going to host this? Who's going to be the host of that event, do you know?
The Atlantic Institute is hosting the event.
Okay, yeah.
And we have basically two events wrapped into one.
Oh, okay.
We have a symposium, two-panel symposium in the afternoon. One panel will be discussing the state of or the business landscape in Nova Scotia, if you will. And the second panel, sort of issuing from the first, will be a group of experts trying to determine what sorts of things should we be tracking a year from now to determine whether we are making any progress on this Ivany impetus. We seem to have been talking a great deal about Ivany. 1 year later, it was named the sort of newsmaker item of the year. Mm-hmm. And we think that it's time to stop talking about it and get something done. You may remember when you were in school, if you were anything like me, you kept thinking about studying in terms of how you'd be evaluated.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're trying to do is tell ourselves what we should be evaluating ourselves a year from now in terms of economic benchmarks so that we have essentially hard targets to shoot for and make sure that we make some progress going forward.
All right. So the keynote speaker, you've invited John Bragg, the Blueberry King.
Yes. As you know, John was part of the Ivany Commission,
and
it'll be interesting to have and listen to John reflect on his thoughts about the Ivany process and what he thinks could have been done or what he thinks about where we are a year later.
I'm looking at, you've got a couple of panels. You've invited some guests to sit around and talk, and I guess you're looking for their in. How much of this is going to be just brainstorming or an opportunity to just do some thinking out loud?
It's a bit of both. The panels really are there to sort of seed the conversation and get people's brains going. But what we're looking for is input from the community, from all different kinds of economic sectors, to let us know how they feel about tracking progress. See, I'm, for example, I'm trained in political science and economics. I don't really know very much about, say, construction. So what would progress consist of in a construction area or for restaurateurs? Or in the arts, for example. So we expect that people will come from different walks of life in the community and sort of have a conversation about what sorts of measurables we need to track in the years ahead.
The first panel actually has someone who was my first guest today, Rob Batherson.
Yes. So Rob and the members of that panel, we expect them to be able to seed the conversation about what is going on in the business community in Nova Scotia, and what are the challenges, what are the obstacles, where things are going well and where things might not be going well, so that we have an idea of what to track better.
So also on that panel, John Risley, he's with Clearwater, is he not?
That's right, and John Risley is also the chairman of the board for the Atlantic Institute. So,
And Stephen Lund?
And Stephen Lund is the former CEO of NSBI, so he has a tremendous experience dealing with the landscape of business people in Nova Scotia.
And he's currently working with the Irving Group, the shipbuilding group.
That's right.
Okay. The second panel, we've had Don Mills on our program numerous times, and he's certainly he's no wallflower. He's certainly interested in getting his opinion out there. So I think this should be quite the panel there, panel two.
Absolutely. And of course, as you know, Don keeps the pulse on just about everything that goes on in terms of tracking and measuring things from a market and economics point of view. So he's very knowledgeable in that area.
All right. So this is all taking place, as we mentioned, on the 11th of February. Who was invited to this? Who did Ames ask to also attend?
We have invited everyone. Everyone is invited to come. We particularly seek direct involvement from sort of business leaders and community leaders and leaders in different areas of the marketplace. So whether they are doctors, lawyers, engineers, merchants, and what have you, we want to have an input as to the sorts of things that they would like to see us track in terms of making economic progress in Nova Scotia.
Well, there's a dinner, so I'm assuming you're selling tickets?
We are selling tickets. Hmm. Tickets for the dinner are, individual tickets are $200, and for participating in the symposium, it's $125 for the symposium and $200 for the dinner.
All right. Well, it sounds like it's going to be quite the day, full day and into the evening on the 11th of February.
Indeed, and we'll hope that lots of people will come and help us and participate in the discussions.
When someone asks you, what is AIMS, how do you describe AIMS, the Atlantic Institute for Market Studies?
We are what normally people call a think tank, which essentially is a sort of a quirky name for a research institute. Our mandate is to do research on public policy issues, better to inform the public about how to resolve social and economic challenges.
Well, it does sound like it's going to be a great event. And again, I want to thank you for spending some time with us, Marco.
Thanks very much for having me on the show.
All right. All the best.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Marco Navarro-Gini is the president and CEO of AIMS. And as mentioned, this event is a chance to do a little bit of navel gazing, perhaps a little bit of forecasting, look down the road, perhaps a little bit of looking back at what's happened since this one Nova Scotia report on the new economy, the so-called Ivany report. And we haven't had a whole lot of uptake. I haven't seen a whole lot of people terribly engaged. We've heard many politicians complaining that perhaps it's not moving quickly enough. You know, we were called into action. We were called to action. It didn't happen. Or at least maybe it is happening. We just don't know about it. And if we don't know about it, then really it's not happening, is it? All right, 2:51. And we're going to talk about this this young lady who was a Guinness World Record holder now for spinning on her skates. I am a horrible skater. Rick Howe was invited to skate with the teams coming to town for this great big Hockey Day in Canada event. Yes, I wouldn't embarrass myself. It was curling. Sign me up. I can do that. But nope, not so much with that. It's all part of the big weekend, including the Rogers Hometown Hockey. We're going to have a couple of events on Saturday that you're going to want to take in. There's going to be that huge hockey celebration down at the Emera Oval. Ron McLean in town to broadcast live. The big screens will be up. There'll be ice sculptors. The Stanley Cup's coming. Also, a shinny tournament. I don't know if that's what Rick Howe's playing in or not. Yeah, they're going to lace on some skates, lace them up, put them on the ice. Hockey Nova Scotia clinics as well, free food, commemorative jerseys, other giveaways, and some interactive activities. The team here from News 95.7 and our sister station, or brother station, Jack FM, are going to be there. It's going to wrap up with a multi-day celebration on the 15th in Cold Harbor. Yep. Home of the NHL star Sidney Crosby and Nathan MacKinnon. And the Penguins versus Blackhawks NHL matchup will be broadcast live. And we'll all have a final opportunity to see the Stanley Cup visiting the sports caster interactive trailer, the Scotiabank community locker room. And we'll meet hockey legends Lanny McDonald and Darcy Tucker. Whose team do you want to play for? I'm not sure if Rick will be on the Lanny team or the Darcy team. Should be fun. You know, we've talked about beer on this show. Microbreweries in specific. Craft, that's a term that gets thrown around a lot. Craft breweries. You know, many in our industry, this broadcast industry or journalist industry, will say this is a craft. Craft is more of attention to detail and, of course, maintaining standards than it is any single one kind of adjective. But the folks with Wrought Iron Brewery have been working at opening up a new one. There's so many new ones opening up. We're going to speak with them as we roll out our usual conversation with Todd the Beer Dude on a Friday. I'm going to invite you to stick around for that topic. And did you get tickets to see The Price is Right in Dartmouth at the Sportsplex? I'm serious. If you did, I want to hear from you right now. Give me a call, 902-405-6000, 1-877-801-8255. I noticed a number of people on social media talking about this. It is this touring roadshow. It's a roadshow that's actually trademark, and it's part of the same company that puts the TV show on, and they're going to have the games here, and they're going to give people a chance to be contestants and to win some exemptions. And I'm looking forward to our chat coming up with Lucille Benoit about this. She's the arena and event manager for the Dartmouth Sportsplex Community Association. And she's going to join us on the show here coming up after our open hour. Phones are going to be open between 4 and 5 this afternoon. Are you worried, concerned?
that we're probably very much still in the dark about this whole incident out in Grand Desert, where the cottage is stacked floor to ceiling with chemicals. And at this point, what we heard earlier today from the chief superintendent, Roland Wells, they don't know where this guy got them, where how they got there, why they were there, what their intended use was, and it's still a huge, big deal to get through, go through them, and try to figure out what the heck is in there, let alone what they're going to do with them. Do you have an SUV? I'm asking because there is a recall, apparently. Goodyear is recalling some tires because of tread cracks, and they're going to temporarily stop selling some SUVs while they address this, and I'm not sure how many of them are here in Canada, but the word went out through the Detroit news office for Goodyear saying that about 48,000 tires were recalled after small cracks in the tread during some endurance testing. They apparently were on about 6,300 Chevy Traverse, GMC Acadia, Buick Enclave models. And it's 18-inch Forterra HL tires, and I'm not sure if the manufacturing date is on it, the code, but they're just for a period between November 30th and the 10th of January. So far, no reports of any accidents or crashes or any serious incidents involving them, and it was apparently about 30% of vehicles that have these 18-inch tires on them right now. I want to say a big thanks to Chef Live, Richard Julian, and all the folks that showed up at the Rib Clinic last night with Rob McCormick. Buddha's Best Barbecue. Great job, Rob. Tasty, too. And great to get a visit of Richard's shop in Dartmouth. Richard, who joins us every Tuesday afternoon for Chef Talk. He has these cooking classes, and last night was all about the barbecue. And I got to tell you, it was not barbecue weather in any stretch of the imagination. That big surprise snowfall wasn't huge, but it was enough slow traffic down considerably trying to get across the bridge last night. But the whole team over at Richard. The whole team doing a great job of doing some nice pairings of some nice craft ales and some tasty ribs. And he was making his short ribs. He does a braised short rib that he does in his, I'm making myself hungry, his Flintstone sandwich. So we'll talk about that. We'll take on that topic when we invite him on our show coming up next Tuesday. All right, in just a few moments, we're going to get the latest from our newsroom and a quick update on what's been happening with this Christopher Phillips gentleman and the fact that he is being held in custody. A brief court appearance today. We'll speak with Chris Martin from the Dare to Dream Home Lottery. We're going to talk about Robbie Burns Day. Are you aware? Do you know? You know auld lang syne, but how much of the story are you familiar with? And do you have any idea why we're still celebrating his birthday? Well, we're going to talk about that coming up next hour. And we'll hear from the publisher of the Watch, University of King's newspaper. They're running into some issues, some concerns. And as also mentioned, Betty Ann Lavallee, the national chief, will be visiting us as part of her visit here in Canada, part of a national grassroots engagement tour. And we'll invite her into the studio. All right, stick around. We are going to be back in just a few moments after we give you a news update.